Ursula Stevens has been a great advocate of us. And while we have been at this conference today, I received a letter from Ursula on behalf of the new Prime Minister-elect, Kevin Rudd, to all of us here at the LAMS conference. So if you'd like, I'll just briefly read that. Dear James, on behalf of Kevin Rudd, Prime Minister-elect, I extend a warm welcome to all the national and international delegates at the second International LAMS Conference in Sydney. Congratulations on your continuing efforts in this important area of learning and on hosting the International LAMS Conference in Australia. The OECD report, Are Students Ready for a Technology-Rich World, 2006, reports that the effective use of ICT in schools can have an immediate positive impact on the school's learning environments by creating more dynamic interactions between students and teachers, increasing collaboration and teamwork in problem-solving activities, stimulating creativity in both students and teachers, and helping students to control and monitor their own learning. The incoming Labor government has made an important commitment to revolutionise classroom teaching by putting a computer on the desk of every upper secondary student and providing Australian schools with high-speed broadband connections as part of Australia's education revolution. LAMS, of course, has such an important role to play in this education revolution. The contribution of LAMS to classroom learning, curriculum development, and providing access to students at all level, even in isolated rural and remote learning environments, to a broad curriculum is already significant, and its potential for future learning revolution is being discovered by more and more educators every day. Our government will also work with the states and territories and the deans of education to ensure new and continuing teachers have access to training that enables them to use the technologies that broadband delivers to enrich children's education experience. We are also committed to investing in the development of online curriculum resources for all students and support conferencing facilities for those studying specialist subjects such as languages. This is where LAMS will come into its own. I understand that the focus of the conference will be on the practical benefits of learning design. There are so many lessons to be shared about the learning experiences and potential of LAMS and how LAMS can contribute to addressing the challenges of future learning for both individuals and organisations. Congratulations again on your important work. I wish you every success with the conference and look forward to sharing the important outcomes of the next few days. I trust that the delegates will have a chance to enjoy some of the highlights of Sydney. Kind regards, Ursula Stevens, Labor Senator for New South Wales. So who knows where that might take us in the future? It looks like a good place. So now I'd like to sort of conclude the LAMS conference with my presentation, and then we will have a panel discussion after that. And those of you who looked at the title will notice that I've suggested I might talk about powerful LAMS and simple LAMS and the challenge of pleasing everyone. You know, one of the things we have tried to do is to look at how do we balance the amazing new things that learning design can do while at the same time still making it something that could be understood by, you know, educators and lecturers of all kinds. So I'm going to talk a bit about that in my presentation today. I'm going to start off by suggesting why learning design, which is the general name for the field that LAMS comes from, is not just another educational technology. It's actually a fundamental new way of thinking about this field with far-reaching implications. And from that, I want to pick out one particular but critical piece, and that is in LAMS, for those of you who know it, the authoring environment where you create activities and the monitoring or classroom environment where you run it with students are separate. And I want to talk about why they're separate and why that's so important. Then I want to talk, and this is one of the most exciting things for all of us on the team today, is about the new features coming out in LAMS version 2.1. This includes particularly branching, but also new groupings and other features related to that. And I'm going to use the example of a role play as a way to unpack some of those features. There are many other things you can do at LAMS other than role plays. It just happens to be a good example. And I'll end with a few concluding comments about simplicity and complexity. So, many of you may be new to learning design or new to LAMS, but I think it's worth saying that this is not just another technology. It's not just one more innovative technology in the field. We have many great, interesting technologies like audience response systems where you can click a buzzer to say your vote in a class, you know, or blogs and wikis that allow us to do, you know, different types of collaboration. These are all good things. but their scope and their potential impact ultimately limits to the things you can do with them. Learning design has the potential to go much further. And there are two reasons for that. One is that a good learning design gives you a lesson plan, a set of activities that is ready to run with students, and that will step through your students through all of the activities they're going to do. Whether that's using a blog or a wiki or other things, they all come together in the structured flow of tasks. So there's one thing. But secondly, and perhaps the thing that's driven me most in all these years, is the idea of sharing good practice among educators. That we as teachers and lecturers could create good sets of activities and share them with each other in a way that that means that others can take them up, they can adapt them, they can improve them, they can use them in their own courses. And so that idea of sharing good activities, and not just content, but also collaboration like forum and so on, is so important. And I'd say that there really isn't anything that's got such a fundamental goal in education as learning design in today's environment. You know, ultimately, almost any innovative tool you can think of could run inside a learning design as one of the activities you structure together. There are very few tools that you would say are more fundamental than learning design, in which learning design would be just only one part. You know, a learning management system one can think of in that way, and there's certainly a lot of use of LAMS and, you know, learning design systems, but this potential to coordinate many tools is at the heart of what it's about. And also, some of you may have seen some work we've done to suggest that you can actually use LAMS to describe activities which are not run with technology. You can actually write down a description of things that might be done face-to-face, or might be done, you know, outside in the field, in an excursion and so on. And the interesting thing there is that a LAMS sequence with those kind of things in them might describe a whole set of educational activities, even though some, potentially none of them, are done using technology. And so it becomes a framework for describing activities, not just an e-learning tool. And so in that sense, we're not even just talking about education technology, we're talking about the whole teaching and learning process and a new way to try and describe and represent that. So those are the quite, you know, bold goals, in my view, of what learning design is hoping to achieve. And it's worth saying that sometimes learning design is misunderstood as being, you know, just one more educational approach like constructivism, like problem-based learning and so on. You know, it's got a particular type of pedagogy to it. But I would say it's not really that. It's actually something new, and it's something that we've rarely had in the education sector in all the centuries. It is a standardised way of describing, and also running, the flow of educational activities, independent of any particular approach. So whether you're interested in instructivist style, constructivist style, problem-based learning, you know, all these different sort of theoretical approaches to the way education is done, learning design says we should be able to do all of those, because what learning design is saying, let me just describe the structure of the activities you will do with your students and make that something that is represented and shareable with others. To put it in sort of harder terms, learning design is about the what and the how of education. It's not so much about the why. Okay? It's not about why we teach in this way. It's having made whatever decisions you make as an educator about the way you would like to teach, it helps you to capture and represent that flow of tasks. That's the bit that learning design is trying to contribute. Now, it's not that it's not interested in the why. The why is really important as to why we teach in certain ways, why some ways are more effective than others. But that's not the main thing that learning design is trying to focus on. It's actually just trying to find a way that we can describe in a sort of agreed language, you know, it's like a lesson plan, but for the digital age, a way that the activities actually work. And this sort of central idea of having captured it in enough detail as to what activities I'm going to run in my class or my tutorial today, that if I was to give it to you as another teacher, you could look at that and you would know enough information about how to do the same thing yourself. You know, you could replicate the same experience with your students based on what I've written down. In my European LAMS conference keynote, I used an analogy from music and from music notation. You know, that there was a period of time when music was not written down in an agreed way and it was very hard for people to convey it. But some hundreds of years ago, suddenly a way of writing music down became agreed so that I today in 2007 can look at a piece of music from several hundred years ago and I can know what the person who wrote that down means, and with enough musical skill, replicate that experience and actually recreate that piece of music. I have a hope that one day, we're not there yet, but one day we'll get to the same for education. We'll be able to describe educational processes, the activities of education, with enough detail and in the right way that that could be easily shared among educators so that you could see what someone else has put across. And then not just replicate it, but add to it, improve it, you know, adapt it and so on. That to me is, I suppose, the goal of learning design. one of the things that flows from this is this separation in the LAMS software, if you know it, and it's also true of other lean design systems, of the authoring activities from when you run them with a particular class. And so what this means is that by separating them, it makes it much easier to share them. If I only ever create activities locked within a particular class, there are going to be all sorts of dependencies that when I try and pull that out and give it to someone else, it may not work or may not make sense. So Lean Design says, let author a set of activities in a kind of general way and then apply that to a specific group of students and fill out the extra details about which students and which groups and so on. And that's one of its core ideas. And it's worth saying that the typical learning management system today does not have this separation, or at least not very clearly, and many people have not yet fully understood this. I've used slightly provocative phrase here of the LMS addict. And what I mean by this is the educator who's become so addicted to their LMS that they only now see online learning through the lens of what their LMS provides. And those people have find it difficult to understand the idea that you might design a set of activities as a kind of design in its own right. And then whether you run it with your students or when you run it with them is a separate step that you then get ready to go. Most LMSs today confuse those things together. And so you're effectively editing your live course when you change things in the LMS. And there's no separate, there's no shareable abstract set of activities that's there. Learning design as a field, and LAMS in particular, has this very much at its heart. And why this is important is it makes it possible for us to share and reuse and adapt good ideas. I mean, ultimately, we want to try and capture what has recently been called pedagogical know-how. You know, what's the good ways to make pedagogy happen? That's what a good learning design or good LAMS sequence is ultimately about. So we need to separate the individual course from the general ideas if we're going to be able to share them. That's one of its key concepts. However, this introduces complexity. And this is one of the things that was brought home to me quite strongly. Only recently I was out with a school and some teachers who were using LAMS, and they couldn't understand why setting up the groups was a separate step from the authoring that they'd done. And I think for them what they were seeing was, here's a great tool, I'd like to use it in my class. I want to set up the activities and run them because I'm using it with this class. I know who the class is. I know who my students are. Can't I just decide all of that at once and get on and get going? And I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing for them to have wanted, but it's not the way that learning design, you know, thinks about the world. Learning design would be design the general activities in a way that you could share with any other teacher, then apply that to your local students and groups and so on. So that is one of the issues of complexity that is unfortunately unavoidable in learning design in general and in LAMS, because at the heart of what we're trying to do is to make things shareable outside of any one course. Now, having said that, I'm very conscious that there's more that we could do as LAMS developers, you know, to make that easier and to make it simpler to get groups set up when you author your design. And we will try and do that for next year to make that easier. But I wanted to draw some attention in today's talk. To some extent, there is a fundamental difference there that is worth being aware of. That is the designing of activities as a separate task from then how you implement them with a given set of students. So this idea of sharing pedagogical know-how, if we want to use that phrase, or sharing the learning design, it's worth saying that we're not trying to share every possible element of the teaching and learning process. If we as teachers were to try and write down every element to what makes up a class and what makes it work, you know, we would write and write and write. It would be, you know, an incredibly long document. And learning design is not saying we have to capture every possible thing. What we're trying to capture is enough, the essence of what it is, so that another teacher could take that and implement it. If it's in software, that they could take it and run the same set of activities or add to and adapt that set of activities as a basis for what they want to do. So it's not everything that we have to capture in pedagogy, and I think it would be extremely hard to capture all things. But it's enough of the activity structure so that you know what it would be to do the same thing in your own class. And so I think for that to work, a learning design authoring system, the piece of software you might use to create these, it needs to do two things at once. On the one hand, it needs to be easy enough that, you know, a typical educator can pick it up and understand it. Obviously, there might need to be some training and, you know, some understanding. But as a general concept, it shouldn't be only for some advanced technical people who spend their life working on special technology for systems. Certainly for me, that is not my goal of learning design. I've always wanted learning design to be a tool that the broad range of teachers could use. So that's one bit. But on the second bit, many learning designs will have important bits of process to them. Who does what at what stage and at what time and in what groups And so we want to be able to capture that information about process, about the way that this design actually works in practice. But at times it's been challenging to capture this or to make it reusable. And so today, for most of what I want to share with you, I'm going to use a role play scenario just as an example. As I said, there's many other things you can do with LAMS, and some of you role plays might not be things you might run in your own teaching, but I hope this will at least be of enough use to let you see the different ideas I want to convey. One of the great strengths of role play as a way of teaching is its ability to get students to see things from different perspectives, that they take on a role perhaps different to what they might normally do, they debate with other students from the perspective of their role and through that come to understand other ideas, and very importantly after the role play often stop and reflect and debrief on what it was like to be in that role, what they learnt from that experience. A typical role play structure at a very high level has got some kind of pre-role-play activities where you find out what your role is and you often reflect on that role, maybe discuss with some other students who are of the same role what it's like, your ideas. Then there's this sort of role-play proper where you'll have some kind of ongoing debate based on your roles and discussion based on some kind of scenario, and then this reflection after the role-play on what you've learned. And it's an example of a particular type of pedagogical structure where the process elements are really important. How long does this bit go for? Who is in this group? Should this area be open to everyone or only a private group? Lots of questions about the way that it runs are quite important to making it work. And for those of you who have an interest in the history of learning design as a field, role plays have been one of the critical ideas that actually pushed this area, to its limits. The IMS learning design specification includes the Versailles role play as one of the most challenging examples of what might be done in this field. And this is a bit of a going back to the past for me, but this is a screenshot of LAMS from July 2003. I gave it at a conference in the UK, a CDIS pedagogy meeting, and I attempted to model the Versailles role play, which is this quite complex role play about the end of the First World War, where the six major countries come together to try and negotiate how they will solve at the end of the war. And this is my attempt to represent, the various steps of that role play. And I'm not going to try and go into all the detail here, but a UK colleague, Oleg Lieber, who was one of the people running CDIS at the time, saw this. And afterwards, I remember him saying to me, he said, James, look, that's great, because it's kind of represented sort of the flow, but there's critical information missing here about the way it actually works. For example, these negotiation areas are only meant to be private to two countries at a time, so they can have like a private conference to negotiate what happens. It shouldn't be open to anyone from the role play to come in and have a look. The whole point of it is having private rooms for each pair of countries to go off and debate and then come back and say what they've come up with. And LAMS couldn't do that at that time. It didn't have the features to do it. So while we'd represented some of the lean design, hadn't quite captured all of the important process bits to make it work. And ever since then, I've had this sense that there was more work we needed to do in LAMS to deal with some of the more complex requirements about different groups doing different activities within a learning design. And so that's what I'm going to focus on today. It's worth saying that for those of you also who know the IMS Learning Design specification, other tools like the Reload Editor, which is a screenshot here, allow you to edit things and do some quite complex things right down in the technical depths of it, down in the XML. But it's very hard for a teacher, I would say, next to impossible for a teacher, to understand the way that this works without a great deal of technical understanding of both the specification and ultimately the XML that sits underneath it. That's what it gets produced from this. And you as a teacher need to have some idea of what's going on inside that document to know whether it's working. Whereas LAMS has always hidden this completely. It only gives you the visual flow and the things that you configure. So I've always wanted to balance the power of being able to do a lot of interesting things, but still keep the simplicity and so on of the visual aspect. So the problem as I see it, and this has been a problem we've had for many years, that there are some complex types of educational processes, of way that things work, that we couldn't capture with sufficient simplicity that it was usable and yet power on the other hand. And so, so the question was, can we find a way to implement these complex process elements while keeping a simple and visual experience? And I want to start by saying no. It's still a certain level of complexity to understand this, but I'd like to share with you the amazing work the LAMS team has done this year to get us to the LAMS 2.1 release and the new features in it around branching. So what I'm going to show you is a role play. This is a sort of simplified role play that's been used a number of times in my course and some others. And it's about the adoption of interactive whiteboards in a typical secondary school. This will be a topic that will be of some interest to you. And in this role play, I have four different roles. Pro teachers, the teachers who are really keen on the whiteboards and really want to roll them out more. Con teachers, the teachers who are not so keen on it and don't think they should be rolled out more. School management, the principal or equivalent management, who have to somehow balance these competing interests and think, you know, the whiteboards could be good but can see the concerns of the other teachers. And then students, who've actually had experience of this and who, you know, quite like the whiteboards but don't like them being used just, you know, IT for IT's sake. So this is a role play that I set up to run using LAMS with these four roles within it. And what we have is these three kind of stages to the role play: the preparation beforehand, where you get to find out your role and you think about it; the role play proper, where you debate, you know, from the perspective of your roles; and then the post role play, where you reflect on these things. So I just want to show you, this is a screenshot of that role play from within LAMS version 1. And what you can see, I'll show you a little bit more of this in a moment, but these are all notice boards that explain the scenario and what the roles are at the top. You then get broken up into your groups and you first find out what your role is and you write in a journal to reflect on what you think the issues might be for your role. And then we've got a question and answer task for each role and a forum for each role. And the idea was that just within your role group, so if you were the pro teachers, you'd be there with just a couple of other pro teachers, answer a question about ideas of how they might be useful, and then go in the forum to discuss it. And so again, this learning design, it does represent the structure, but has one very big downside, and those of you who know LAMS well, probably looking at this will realise it. There's no restriction on who can go into those optional tasks. And so if someone from the wrong role group goes into the other role group by accident or by on purpose, that could be quite unhelpful for running the learning design, and there's nothing that LAMS version 1 could do to fix that. And so we've got a requirement for the ability to have separate groups to do different tasks. We can represent the idea but not control it at the level that you might want for a successful design. So that was one of LAMS version 1's limitations. You could still do it. I mean, I've run role plays in LAMS version 1 like this, but you have the risk that people are going to end up in the wrong place and, you know, that might damage the pedagogy. So, you know, there was this problem about having to use the optional box and people going into it. And we just couldn't control that. We also only had random grouping as an option back in LAMS version 1, and it's also a bit grey, really. So LAMS version 2 comes along, the grey bit gets solved to some extent. So this is the same sequence now, but what I've done here is something a little bit different. The Q&A and the forum now have been set as grouping activities. So instead there's going to create four parallel question and answers, four parallel forums, one for each of those role groups. And I can now, because LAMS version 2 says you can hand allocate people to groups, I can choose which students go into those groups. So you can do that, and again, this runs today. It has an interesting problem. Have a look at the text of the Q&A that you get for this. This Q&A is just for your role. Given your role, what do you see as the key issues about wider potential adoption? What I've had to do is to write the text in a generic way so it could work for each of the four groups. Even though they're different role groups, I can't actually tell them different things because it's the same tool that's being used across. And so that's still a very significant limitation within that, you know, existing software. Again, you can work with this. I've run this role play with students and it can work. It has the downside though that, you know, if you forget what your role is, you know, you suddenly, you know, sort of get in the mess here. And so ideally we want a learning design system that could cope with different tasks for different students. And also the way it works is because the groups are numbered just in whatever group it is, I have to kind of say group one is the pro teacher group, and then you have to remember that as a student. You know, it's not helping you to do that. So this kind of problem of generic text that you weren't able to name groups. And ultimately, this is because at the software level, it's been incredibly complex and difficult to actually do different tasks at different points within the sequence. Just turns out that's been really hard to do. But when we rebuilt LAMS from the ground up a couple of years ago and released it at the end of last year, we always knew that one day we would want to do this. And so we built the infrastructure to make it possible. It would just take a while to do all the bits. All right, so now I'd like to introduce LAMS version 2.1, it's still in alpha, that means it's not yet all fixed. I wouldn't use this with students for real today. It's still got bugs. But we have the following new features in it. We have branching and three types of branching. Teacher allocated branching, so you choose which students go down which path. Group based branching, where if you have pre-existing groups, it will automatically take those students down the branches that you assign to the groups. or what we're calling tool output-based branching. Things like, if you get a certain score on a quiz, you will go down one branch. If you get a different score, you'll go down a different branch. Okay, so these are all new features. And the other thing is that we also have now sequences inside optional boxes. So you can actually have a set of, you know, optional tasks where there are sequences, and students can choose to do one or two or three, you know, however many sequences you choose, if you want to let them have that choice. So these branching features, these are all automated, where the system or you, the teacher, will implement them. The optional one is where the students have a choice about what sequences they will do. All right, so let me just take you through this, and I'll try and keep it quite brief. There's a demonstration site that is up today so that you'll be able to actually go and play with this yourself, as long as you realise there will be still some bugs. The important thing, many of you may not realise, there is this thing at the bottom of every LAMS authoring screen called properties, and you can just click on that once and it will pop up this little area, and it's extra details about the way that the tool works. And we use this properties bar quite a lot for these new features, so if you're not used to it or haven't seen it, it's important to be aware of that. So, here's my old sequence, the role play one, set up in the normal way. What I do is delete all of those tasks as they stand and drop in now this new branching tool. And you find branching up under flow. If you click on that, you can now drop that into it. And when I double click on branching, it will sort of expand up a new area, and then I can create branched sequences within it. And so what you're now looking at is the four different role groups, each with their own notebook, Q&A, and forum that will run independently. So whichever students I've allocated to those different roles, when they get to here, they will now only go on that role, and it's private only to them. So students from, you know, the pro teacher group cannot get into the con or the management site. It's completely separate. Also, you can name these branches so that later on you can then apply things to those branches. You know, if I'm going to have groups, I can say this group will apply to branch one. So I've been in, I've put in this branching tool, I've then created the internals to go within it. Now I go back to my grouping tool, and you'll notice here that I can specify the name of the grouping tool that is going to be hand chosen by me, the teacher. And a new feature now, I can name my groups. So if you've got groups that you want to use in the sequence which have a particular meaning, they're teams or, you know, role groups, like you can now specify that. And so if I click on that, I can fill in now the details of my four roles, so that's actually named now as the group that they are in. The reason that's relevant is now if I go and click on branching, here I can choose what type of branching it is. Is it teacher choice? Is it group-based or is it tool output? So at the moment I'm choosing group-based. I then choose what grouping it's based on, which is this one, grouping for roles, and then I set up the mappings that go with this. And just a brief point, you can save at any time within these new features, but if you haven't finished doing all the mappings or you haven't arranged everything, LAMS will actually warn you now. And it'll say, look, there's still things to be worked out, or this is missing, or you've made an error in the way you've done it. So we haven't got every bit of that done completely, but we've tried to sort of put in checking and validation to help you to do this complex set of tasks. Anyway, so this is the key tool. So I'm now setting up my mappings for the grouping. And so I've got the four branches that were the four different pathways in it. And now I've got these different student groups. I've already set up two already. Now I'm just assigning management here to branch three, student to branch four. And so now the system will know that the students who are in those particular groups will only go down that branch, will only see that branch and not see anything else. From a student's point of view, so having done all of that, set that all up, and it takes a little bit of work to get used to at first, but it's not a huge period of time. It's about sort of 20 minutes for me to play around to get that in place. Now, from a student's point of view, if I click on the sequence and go into this, because this student's been assigned to the pro teacher role, they can now get a forum that in fact has specific information for them, you know, tells them that they're in this role, and it could have had whatever I liked unique to that group. So I had special documents I wanted to give them about the pro teacher role, special comments to consider, whatever it might be, I can now do all of that unique to that group. So that's the first of the new options, which is group-based. There are also two others which I'll mention very briefly. One of them is teacher choice. So this is where you as a teacher want to hand allocate people to branches where you don't already have a particular group or some other thing in mind. So in that case, having chosen teacher choice, When you run the sequence, you will get an option within monitoring, which is that you've got a branching where you haven't yet set which students are to go where. And so if I click on that little go button, it'll give me a page where I can see these are the branches you've got, these are the students, and so you sort of click on one branch, click on the student, and it'll put them into that branch. So you can essentially sort of hand allocate who you want into which area. And that's just an example of a student who's been hand allocated into the comm teacher group, getting to see, you know, specific text only for that particular case. Finally, and this is in some ways the most powerful, but also by definition the most complex, is the new idea of tool output branching. So what I've done now is, let's imagine that those of you who know this sequence, after the main discussion forum, the role play proper, we could have a little task where students say, at the end of the day, do you think that we should roll out the interactive whiteboards? Yes or no? And they have to choose that as an answer. Well, I can actually use the information as to whether they said yes or no to then have a new branch where I might put all the yes people together and give them some new arguments or new ideas as to, you know, are you sure? You know, are you really sure that yes is a good idea? And all the no people I can put into a different group and give them some resources and say, why do you think no? What about these good benefits? And so I can, in this case, having already done a branching for their roles, having had the main discussion, I can get them to essentially vote on this and use that voting information to have this extra branch, which would be, if you said yes, here are some new resources and a new forum just for the yes people, here's the same for the no people. And what I need to do for this one is we create what's called a condition. This is where we take information, sort of data from one tool, and prepare it. So I'm using the quiz tool here, and I should say this: the use of the quiz tool is not quite perfect. It should be a voting tool with no right or wrong answer, but it's the best we can do at the moment. And I've said that if you give a no vote, we'll give that a value of 0, a yes vote will get a value of 1, and so now we can use that information to do branching. And so what I can now do is create a mapping between the condition of, if you did a yes vote, then I'm going to send you down the yes branch. If you did a no vote, I'll send you down the no branch. So what I'm doing is I'm using information from previous activities to decide where students will go in the future. Now, the obvious one to imagine is multiple choice questions, you know, scores and so on, but over time we will develop more and more interesting ones. We already have forum, and so the number of forum postings can be used to branch today, and in the future we'll have all sorts of other things that can be used as a basis if you want to send students down different directions, maybe for remediation, maybe for creating different groups and so on. So to just summarise that, there'll be these three new types of branching: groups, teacher choice, and tool output based on conditions. And I should say, you can have multiple groupings within a sequence, you can have multiple branchings, you can have, you know, different subgroups applied to the same branch, you can have skipping in branches, so some students do a task, others just skip straight forward to do the next thing. You know, there's all sorts of things that will be possible within it. And some of the tool outputs will be not only scores, but also Boolean, that is either or type decisions. You know, either they, you know, said this word in a forum or they didn't, split them on that basis. You know, that also will be possible. So that's all automated or teacher-driven types of branching within LAMS that provide some quite powerful new options. There's also what we call optional sequences. This is where you want to let students choose which path they want to go down. So here are a number of different pathways. It's up to you to choose them. And if you want to do more than one pathway, that can also be a choice. So what you do is, now under the optional box, you can drop a optional sequence into it. And here you can see I've dragged and dropped three activities into one optional sequence, two into another, and one into another. And so when the students get through to here, then they have a choice of which sequence they will do after that. And also, if you allow them, whether they can do more than one sequence. So just briefly, I appreciate it's a somewhat technical, sort of LAMS-oriented perspective, but for those of you who've been using the tool, it's kind of exciting to have finally got there. What does this mean pedagogically, though? Well, we can now assign different students to different topics, and there are so many things that that will allow us to do, where you might have a set of activities you do as a whole class, but then you want each group to go and do a different topic. Maybe it's an excursion, you know, maybe it's collecting data. All of that is now possible. And then you can have reporting back to the whole class. You know, what did your group find? What did your group find? And so on. We can use the branching function, and particularly where you can use one branch that's got activities on it and the other branch that's got effectively no activities, that is, kind of skip this step. You can then have it for remediation. So students who score less than this on this quiz do these extra tasks to confirm your knowledge. If you got more than this, then you can just skip straight ahead and do whatever the next task is. So that's also possible. Allowing students to choose different sequences by using the new optional sequence task, and that might be letting them choose which topic they want to do. Maybe it could be different skill levels, you know, hard sequences versus easy sequences, letting them choose that. And allowing them to do more than one sequence lets them make their own judgments sort of on thoroughness. You know, here's four different sets of activities. You've got to do at least one, but if you'd like to do more than one, that's up to you as a student. You know, you can do all four of them if you'd like. That's also possible. And then I like this idea of using student opinions or ideas, you have to vote on something or make some comment, and then having done that, you can use that to then create groups to send them off for discussion. You know, I really like the idea of having done my whole interactive whiteboard role play, I've got all these students who say, yes, we should roll them out, and having done that, I go, right, now I can present some arguments for why they're not such a good idea and get them to reflect on those, whereas all the students who said, no, terrible idea, I go, right, let me show you some of the good evidence for why you might consider them. That seems to me to be a great way to actually extend that learning, having done the earlier tasks. Some of the future features, these are not things we're promising to do, or certainly not anytime soon, but which we think would be also taking it forward, is there's certainly a lot more advanced features we can do in grouping and branching, new types of tool outputs, new types of tools, applying the output to more of our current tools, and also in the future, more complex conditions. For those of you who'd be interested, multiple conditions combined together, algorithms about who will go there. You know, for those of you who want to really push the boundaries, we think that'll be very exciting. We also hope sometime next year to start having a look at an idea we call actionable roles. This is where, within a particular tool, there could be different sets of functionality for different roles. Think of a chat tool. In a chat tool, you could have someone who's a moderator of the chat. You could have the participant in the chat. You also have someone who just views the chat but is not allowed to participate. So once we have those kind of features, then we could use them as well to allow different students to take on the role of moderator or other students to be able to just view a chat but not participate in it, and then also to combine that as well with branching. So be able to make the tools richer in the ways that they could work, and then you can use that where that's appropriate. And the last one is looping. A number of people have asked about looping. So being able to do a set of activities, then come back and sort of do them again. And it still remains one of the very challenging things to do in software. And we are still looking at it, still trying to work out the right ways to do it. But all I could say is we're aware of it. We're trying. One of the reasons it's so hard is because it's not always clear what completing a task means if you allow people to keep coming back to it. And how do you know when people can progress or not? Nonetheless, we are looking at that and working on it. And there is one extra new feature in 2.1 now, which those of you who've seen in Monitor, there's this edit activity option where you can actually go in and change what an activity's text is before students get to it. But once students have got into it, it kind of locks it down. We're now opening it up for at least five of our tools. You can even edit the text of an activity when students are in it. And so if you had a notice board with certain information on it, even if students have got in there, you could go and add extra information to it as a teacher. And we think that that might provide at least some simple ways of starting to do looping. You know, if you put a stop point in and then get students to keep coming back to tasks and then you keep adding to those tasks by using this new live edit feature, then it would mean you could do something that would be at least the first attempt at looping. So again, for those of you interested in the more advanced things, that's now coming out. We'll give you a big fat warning message when you do it because you are editing the live course that the students are in. Nonetheless, if that makes sense educationally, you can now do it. So, to sort of wrap up some thoughts on simplicity and complexity, what I've just described to you is some of the more powerful, but again, new and complex features of LAMS. We've done everything we can to try and keep them simple. You know, we've kept the visual interface, there is no XML, there's no full-blown programming, you can do it all at that simple level. And, you know, there are many things you could use it for, you are not required to. No one has to use branching, you know, it's not being forced on you, it's just a new bit of the toolkit. We will also be providing comprehensive documentation about how to use this and animations and so on. And I should acknowledge Jeremy Page's work. Jeremy, thank you. Jeremy has been doing all the fantastic animations you've seen on the LAMS website to show you how to do things. It's really been very useful. There is one last thing on simplicity, and that is some of you will know that we've been wanting to do some work on what we call a pedagogic planner or an activity planner. This would be if you had a pre-built template of activities where you'd already done the hard work, branching and all the rest. and you just let the teachers just fill in the content. What's the question? What document do you look at? What's the discussion topic? So you don't need to know any of the fancy LAMS authoring, but you could still apply it to your discipline area. That is something that we really hope to do this year, but we were not able to get funding for it. I am very hopeful we might get to that next year, and I think it would be a very important thing to do. And in some ways, the additional power of branching and so on makes the case even stronger for why then having more simple template-based editing would be useful. So if you haven't seen it before, just that's the technical wiki of the LAMS. It's got everything you could want to know technically about LAMS, both for system administrators and for programmers. Those of you who haven't seen this, this is the user documentation or teacher documentation website, everything you could want to know about using LAMS. And this has got details about every tool, how they work, and little animations of what they do and so on. This is just a brief screenshot of the activity planner, where the idea might be that you have a number of pre-built types of activity templates for different types of learning. And more importantly, that you, having chosen one, you've sort of got a pre-built sequence running down the page, and here you would just fill in the specific bits of text or the document that you want to share without having to know all the rest of LAMS authoring. And so one of the things we want to do to help simplicity is to make this possible. So those of you who want to build really powerful sequences with all the new amazing features, you can do it. Equally, if you then want to be able to share that with a colleague who would only want to just fill in, you know, their topic and their document, could use an interface like this without actually never seeing the rest of LAMS authoring. So we still hope to do it. It's not done yet, but fingers crossed for 2008. And one last one. This is one more contribution to simplicity. Those of you who know the LAMS community and have used sequences there will know it's a bit of a pain to get a sequence and have a look at it. You have to click to download to your desktop. You import it up into your account and have to preview. Well, with special thanks to my colleague Ernie Giglioni, we now have a preview button in the LAMS community. So if you find a sequence that looks good to you, you can hit preview and immediately see it from the learner's perspective. If you like it, then you can still download it and upload it to your account. But to make it a bit easier to be able to see these great pre-built designs that people have shared, that's now a new feature to help. And that's it opening up. For those of you who don't know, Ernie Giglioni couldn't unfortunately be with us for this LAMS conference. He's in Argentina getting married as we speak. So we send him all our best wishes and particularly thank him for this great feature that he gave us just before he left. So to wrap up, I'd like to just give some thank yous because LAMS is a very significant, large development effort. So many people support and make it possible. And I'm just indebted to a huge number for it. And I just want to mention some of those. The Department of Education, Science and Training, DEST, has been supporting LAMS indirectly through a parallel project called RAMS, which is using the ideas of LAMS but in a research context. And that has been very helpful for some of these complex features. I'd like to thank all of the LAMS development and admin and system support team. Everyone has done just such an amazing job this year. Particularly, I'd like to acknowledge Ernie and Fiona's work. They worked so hard to lead the project. Fiona, who's here. everything that's great about the LAMS architecture, Fiona and the team have made possible. Everything that doesn't work about LAMS, it's my fault. I also want to acknowledge that there are at least 61 translators of the LAMS software who currently translate it into 25 languages, and they all do that for free. They do that just for the good of the community. And now, with our partners at Data Pacific, we'll be adding Japanese to that soon. We are very indebted and pleased to have that help. Lots of people have shared LAMS sequences through the LAMS community and with each other, and not just educators, but also students. I'm very thankful to many students who've done that, and so I really appreciate that work. Many people have been early adopters of LAMS, and I know a number of you are in the audience, and you've had to fight for that. It has not been easy always to convey to people why that this is worth investigating as a new technology, and people who've seen it through kind of the wrong lens or not understood what it is. It's not always been easy, and I do thank you greatly for persevering with it in your context, and I hope with time that the case will become clearer as to why it does something special. I'd like to give special thanks to Leanne Cameron. Leanne is just amazing. Thank you. She has helped coordinate both this conference and also the European conference earlier this year. She also kind of keeps the educator flame burning bright within the technical team who, don't always understand what us educators are talking about, but Leanne, I'm very much indebted to that. Thank you. And also to Renee Vance. Where's Renee? Okay. Renee, my assistant, has been very helpful in organising the logistics of this conference, but also, to be quite honest, I would not have survived this year without Renee's very great help in just all the things. I've had a very difficult year this year, and Renee's been one of the things that's made it possible. So you can all, I suppose, thank her on my behalf. It's been great. And also my wife, Bronwyn, who's here. Where's Bronwyn gone? She's up the back. Bronwyn's the very pregnant woman you may have seen wandering around. We're due for our second child, hopefully not this week, but soon. And also my little daughter, Zoe, who's 5. They give up a huge amount so that Lambs can be possible, and I put the effort into it. So my thanks to all of those people that we're able to do Lambs. So, resources for that presentation. These slides will go up. If you're interested to go and try out Lambs to look at some of these sequences, by all means, please do it. For those of you who can't wait for the alpha, is stinger.melco.mq.edu.au. You can go there now, get yourself an account and try it out. You know, my warning, there are bugs, it's not all fixed, we will keep evolving it, but for the next few months we'll be using that to get all the bugs out of it. We hope to release the full sort of ready to run in schools and universities version of 2.1, probably, you know, about February, maybe March. That's our rough time frame. Okay. So that's it for me, and I'm conscious I've talked longer than I should have, and we have some brief time now for some reflections on the conference. I might ask if, John, perhaps if you could come and join us, and Debbie and Pat. Yes? What I might do is perhaps ask just each of you to perhaps offer some reflections on the conference for us, because we have only some limited time. I'll stop talking. And then after that, we'll perhaps wrap up for today. We have a final parting gift for all of you before you go, so make sure.
I'd just like to say thank you for letting me be here today, because the lovely part about actually being at a LAMPS conference is that you start to find out about what wonderful things other people are doing in LAMPS, the sharing and the ability to network. So I'd just like to say that this opportunity for me has been very valuable, because every now and then when you sort of get bogged down into time issues, it sort of reinvigorates your energy to get more involved back in the LAMPS journey. So that's what I'd like to say about being here. But about the actual conference itself too, it's just been fabulous to hear and just learn some new, get new ideas from people and take in that direction.
Well, I feel quite excited, James. Some of the research that we did that I shared with very early on this morning was done at version one, I think, one of its earliest ones, and some of the feedback that we provided was the frustration of having two classes and not being able to have selected groups, and it had to be random, and we ended up having 5 students from the one class in the same group. The sorts of things that you've shared with us this afternoon make that online sharing in the communities that we have a lot more feasible and practical in terms of outcomes for us. As I said, John's earlier work that sort of led us into learning design and what we were doing, I think we're on a pathway. We won't be veering from it. We're certainly keen to explore other initiatives. And our next one is to look at very much staff, or library staff, and how we might be using LAMPS for the sorts of development that ensure ease of access, when they're in a library rather than having to come off desk and come into a central place, that they can actually explore some of those activities for their own knowledge base. So we'll be looking forward to the next phase for us, which is working with adults as opposed to students. So again, thank you for the opportunity of being here and sharing with people, and from my forum, the last one that we had, for the people here who actively contributed and posed more questions for us as well. Thank you very much.
Further to add. I'd actually like to see if people that have sort of been listening to other people all day have got any remaining questions that we might sort of respond to, because I think that given the range of presentations, there's a certain set of ideas, and what people take away from this is all of those ideas and ways in that they can apply them in their particular context. Beyond that,
I'm conscious of that, and that's my bad for talking slightly too long. I'm conscious that a number of people also have to get away, and so what I'd suggest, those of you who can hang around, particularly those of you who are coming to the dinner with us, we can talk further now, but I might otherwise draw things to an official close. But firstly, if I can thank our three keynote speakers for their wonderful contribution. John, thank you very much.
Just guess.
And Pat, because they won't let you take alcohol back on the plane, we thought that's not alcohol.
Thank you.
And finally, we have some gifts for everyone. This is something on behalf of us to you. This is a little lamb's key ring. We were going to give them out before. They have one slight downside, and I was very worried that you would use this as an audience response mechanism while I was presenting, because if you press their tummy, they snooze. So we have one of these for everyone. We'll pass those around. But perhaps that concludes our conference today. Thank you very much to everyone for coming. Those of you who have the workshops on tomorrow and the next few days, they're at the Tepet Centre, which is a couple of hundred metres over there. If you're not sure where that is, ask one of us. Also, someone will meet here at 10 o'clock tomorrow, or just before 10 o'clock, which is when the workshop starts. So if you don't know where it is, come here and someone will take you across from there. Otherwise, thank you very much, everyone, and we'll hand these around in a moment. About what they're doing in Spain
over
at the Staff Club, which is sort of over this way. Probably a bunch of us going to go, and I think it opens from now.
Okay, good. So I'm just going to go and drop my bag off.
Yeah.
And come back.
Okay. Do you know where to go to?
I think I go up the main pathway, and then I'll find it. I think Robin showed me. I got to speak to this John.
So that's where we are now.
If you look out the window, that's like there, and this is the main pathway, right?
That window's going that way.
So when we were in the lunch eating?
Yeah, yeah, so that's right, that's looking that way. So you go up Peter's main path, down a bit, and it's W5A.
And we're next behind, right next to Macquarie Theatre, but there's an entrance just here. You go up to the stage.
Yeah, so we're a new
company. Yeah. Oh, no, grab one.
This is a fine walkway. This is a next building. And there's a corridor into the. There's a
to the roof. So it's actually on the roof. That's the only way.
Well, I'm ready to get the moment till tomorrow. How long have you been here?
I'm here until
after Wednesday, or Wednesday afternoons onwards, I'm great. But the reason I had a divisional meeting after my presentation started at 10, it was 10 minutes late.
Okay, well, I don't want a 10-minute conversation.
No, that's okay. Well, do you want to get together for maybe lunch on Wednesday? Oh, no, you've still got your workshops, haven't you?
I've got workshops Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday, I'm off. I'm free all day. Friday, I'm downtown. I'm going down in
do you want to get together? When do you finish the workshop? Well, do you want to get together for a drink after work or something like that? That's easy. And if you're moving down on Wednesday, Thursday night?
Friday.
Thursday night I can drop the shop at the
Okay. Yeah, right. We're going to do that.